Okay, welcome back, everybody. I'm going to share my screen. And here we are. Today is class number 4 on the series, Send My People Out or Let My People Go, re-examining the story of the Exodus, part 4. And the question today, did Pharaoh change his mind or did God change his plan? Or in a nutshell, everyone knows that after Pharaoh sends them out, X amount of days later, he changes his mind and chases them. And the question is going to be, why does he chase them? So before we do our introduction, I want us to go back to all the movies. In all the movies, we talked about this in the very beginning, in all the classic movies and the classic understanding of the story, Moshe goes to Pharaoh and asks for freedom. Let my people go free to the promised land. Pharaoh says, no, 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 I won't let them go. God brings 10 plagues. Pharaoh, after 10 plagues, finally gives in and kicks him out of the country. He said, go to the promised land, you're free. And then X amount of days later, he changes his mind, and then he gets washed up. And we explained that that story, even though it's very simplistic, it's definitely not the story in Chumash, that we saw in our first class, and we'll see it again today. But we gave a different background to the story, and I'm going to review it now quickly in an introduction. And in our introduction, we have to go back to class 1, but we never finished the story in class 1. We just gave the introduction to it to explain the theory of what was the reason for God's plan. You know, why did God tell Moshe Rabbeinu what appeared to be a lie, which we try to explain really wasn't a lie? And what was the logic, why the need basically to lie, or why the need for all the plagues? Why can't we just say the truth and say we're going for good? It's, why all these negotiations? And why what appears to be trickery? So I'm going to just read my introduction, but just for review. So our first class, we explained the title for the series. It wasn't Let My People Go, like in all the movies, but rather it's Send My People Out. I think we proved that quite well. We're going to review that again today. And we try to show you that Moshe's primary goal, basically the job that God gives him, was to convince Pharaoh not to let them free, but rather it was in Egypt's interest to send the people out to serve the God a three-day distance into the desert, because that would be the only thing that would put an end to the cycle of devastated plagues. It was just plague after plague after plague. Before every plague, there's a warning. If you don't let us serve our God in the desert, there'll be another plague. And we want to convince them it's in their interest that they send us out. So permission to leave, also we explained, would not be enough, because God wanted everybody out. And if he only gave us permission to leave, the Jews, probably not all of them, would have left, especially not immediately. And also, we need to be in a position where Egypt is very excited and very interested in our leaving, and that will create an atmosphere that whatever we borrow, whatever we ask for, they'll be more than happy to help us. And that's going to be to fulfill God's promise of the great wealth, Rechush Gadol, from the covenant of the parts. We're going to go back to that later again today. And our final thing we posited is that had we told the truth, no one would have believed it, because no one in Egypt ever worried about the Jews not returning, because in their eyes, there's nowhere else for the Jews to go. There is no feasible option to go anywhere else other than stay in Egypt. The only fear was either possibly taking over Egypt, joining an enemy and taking over, or maybe even just declaring independence and leaving slavery, but not accepting slavery anymore. So therefore, we needed this military government and this oppression, and that kept them everyone in bay. And one last thing, if Pharaoh is worried about a takeover, it makes sense why the male children are going to be going to be killed at birth, as opposed to the female children, because every male child in 20 years from now could become a soldier, but female children can still do labor and work. So that would explain his decree about killing the male children. Okay, so in today's show, we're going to go back and return to that study. And this time we're going to go in the order of Chumash. There was a couple of things we did before. I want to go in Chumash order till we finish our review and take off where we left off. So part number 1, we're going to review our key points in order of Sefer Shemot. In the beginning of chapter 1, remember, Vayakom Melech Hadash HaMitzrayim, there's a new king over Egypt who didn't remember Yosef, or basically we explained there was a new regime who took over. Remember, our claim was there's so many dynasties in Egypt, every couple hundred years, even less sometimes, there's a new dynasty, either within the family there's a takeover, or a different family takes over, or a different ethnic group takes over, an outside enemy takes over. But every pharaoh worth his name was always worried about a takeover, and it happened all the time. Now that the Jews become so numerous, Pharaoh tells his people, "Hinei am b'nei Yisrael v'ravatzu mimenu." They're more powerful than us. They're going to get more powerful. Mm. Let's outsmart them. Let's prevent this from happening, and we gain cheap labor this way. And what does he tell his people? If this ethnic group gets bigger and bigger, and they're so powerful, should war break out, and an outside enemy try and take over, or maybe a different family within Egypt try to take over, they'll join the enemy. This small ethnic group of Jews who's getting bigger and bigger, they can become a political force or military force that can help our enemy and join the takeover, and they'll fight against us, but the enemy will come from the inside. There'll be an outside enemy coming and attacking us, and there'll be an enemy, what we call the fifth column, coming from the inside. And that was his fear, which is the most logical fear, because he's not worrying about his slaves leaving, because slavery hasn't begun yet. And if any Jew wanted to leave, they could have left. We're not worried about the Jews picking up and leaving Egypt. We're worrying about them trying to take over Egypt from the inside. That we explained from the beginning of the book, and that's the beginning. That's the main fear. And that gives a logical reason to explain to his people why it's okay to enslave the people. It's for national security. Now, and that explains why the first decree is killing the male children, etc. That was our first part, and we used chapter 1 to explain that background. Now, what was Moshe's job? We went to the burning bush narrative, and we tried to show you that God's going to take us out of Egypt, and Moshe's job was to be basically to follow orders, and God's going to take them out, and Moshe's job is simply to fail. And what we showed you, that God tells Moshe, "I see the suffering of my people in Egypt, and therefore God says, I'm going down. I'm coming down to take them out of Egypt and to bring them to the promised land, the land I promised their forefathers." That was clearly Brit Ben Abtarim. Remember, we saw the Ani, we saw the affliction in Egypt, we saw the land of the seven nations, we saw them leaving Egypt and coming out and punishing their oppressor. And now your job, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, now you go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh, and your job is to take them out. And then we explain, Moshe asked, who am I to go? I'm not the official leader. And how am I going to do it? And God answers him, don't worry, I'll be with you. Here's the sign, the burning bush. And we follow the Rashbam. We'll go over it in a minute. God's answer to Moshe's question, how do you take them out of Egypt, is basically tell them we have to serve our God on the mountain. Basically, if you follow Rashbam, God tells Moshe, I'm sending you to Pharaoh. And Moshe asks, who am I to go to Pharaoh? And God says, don't worry, I'll be with you. I'll get you in. The bush is a sign you can trust me. And God tells Moshe, you take them out of Egypt. Moshe asks, how do I convince Pharaoh to do so? You're following Rashbam. And God's answer here is, the plan is, convince Pharaoh we have to serve our God on the mountain. And as Rashbam points out, that even though it doesn't say that here, when you read the story, that's clearly what's happening. So Ramban uses the rest of the story to explain that Moshe's question is how to take them out. He's not refusing to do the job. He's asking how to do the job. He's not explaining why he doesn't want the job. He's explaining why he can't do the job, or asking how to do it. And God answers them, the plan is, tell him we have to serve our God in the desert. And the way the Rashbam explained it was, that's something he might be able to give into. Because maybe religious freedom would let him go, and it was a bit of a hoax to get them out of Egypt. Our explanation was telling the truth would not have worked because it wouldn't make sense. But to serve God in the desert would make sense, and we'll see all the fringe benefits we gain by asking for this excuse, as we'll go through. Okay. Now, to prove the double mission, and what appears to be a glitch in the story, is that God tells Moshe Rabbeinu in the burning bush, go gather the people together. And tell them, remember, go to the elders of Israel to tell the people, tell them, God appeared to me, I'm keeping my promise to take you out of Egypt. I'm going to take you out of your suffering from Egypt, your affliction, to the promised land. So God tells Moshe, tell the people, we're leaving Egypt to the promised land. We're going into freedom and to become a nation. And at the same time, he tells them, you get your credentials from the elders, go to Pharaoh on behalf of the elders or with the elders and tell them, God appeared to us. We need to go a 3-day distance in the desert to serve our God. Now, we use that to explain our opening question. How can God tell Moshe Rabbeinu? We call that the big lie. How can God tell Moshe, tell the people we're going free and tell Pharaoh we're only going 3-day distance in the desert? how could it be that no one would find out? So the way I tried to explain it was, is that no one in Egypt could believe, and we'll see later, even the Jews don't really think it's realistic, that over 1 million people are going to pick up and leave Egypt and relocate anywhere else. There's nowhere for them to go to. If they go north, it's the sea. If they go west, it's the Sahara Desert. If they go east, it's the Sinai Desert. If they go south, you're still in Egypt. And if you go to Canaan, there's no way the Canaanites will let you in. There are big armies in Canaan. And as the people themselves say, a year later, there's no way we can take over Canaan. If we try to enter the land en masse, they'll kill us. And which is actually what happened with the Mapilim. And therefore, because it's not logical, if they would tell the truth, we want to go to the promised land, no one would believe it. They would think it's a cover story for going out to regroup and come back and take over. Or maybe going to southern Egypt to declare independence or something. But basically, my point was that telling the truth would not have been realistic because no one would have believed it. But a request for religious freedom at first sounds a little strange, but it gets supported with all the warnings and the successive plagues. Now, my proof of that was God's following point to Moshe Rabbeinu. God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, your job is to go to Pharaoh and tell him we need to go 3-day distance into the desert. But God's telling Moshe Rabbeinu, your job is to fail. We spent a lot of time on that proving, and we'll prove it again today. God tells Moshe, I know he's not going to say yes, and certainly he's not going to send you out. Remember, Pharaoh's the Yad Chazaka. Clearly, Pharaoh, not only won't he let you go, he won't kick you out. I need him to kick you out. He won't take a Yad Chazaka and expel you with only the warnings. I need successive plagues and successive warnings to convince him. But after I bring all my plagues, v'shalachti yadi, I'll send my hand against Egypt. I'll smite them over and over again with all my plagues, with all my wondrous things. And after all that, then I'll send you out. And we explained that Moshe doesn't know how many plagues there's going to be. That was our shir last week, but the Moshe was in the dark until Chosha. Until darkness, we tried to prove that last week. Moshe's job is basically, I tried to show you last week, he doesn't know God's master plan, but God needs him to go to Pharaoh to warn him before the plagues, to slowly convince Egypt it's in their interest to send us out, because we need Egypt to kick us out. That's going to enable all the Jews leaving Egypt and not leaving anyone behind. Now, at the end of God's mission to Moshe Rabbeinu, he also explains to him, after I bring my plagues and it's over and he sends you out, we'll be in a position that the people will be able to ask the Egyptians anything they want. That way you won't go empty-handed. And therefore, you can ask your neighbors when you leave for clothing, for gold, for silver. We'll see if the man asks for arms and put them on your children and take advantage of Egypt. We're going to talk about that, getting our back wages. Or we need to become a nation. We need this Rechush Gadol, and God has to keep his promise of Brit Ben Abtarim. How it becomes moral and legal, we'll see as we go on. Let me take a quick break for a second and make sure everything's clear to now. And I'm going to share the source sheet one more time. 1 second. I'll put in the chat. Here's the chat real fast. Here's the source sheet for those who want. And get Pharaoh. Okay. Did Pharaoh... The question was, get Pharaoh to kick Israel out to do him what was the job done easier? 1 second. Ben, I didn't understand the question.
Okay. Instead of picking on all of Egypt, God could have picked directly on Pharaoh, made his life miserable like God did to Job, at least in the story. And say, until you kick my people out, you're going to have scales and this and that and the other. I mean, why not be more direct? Kill just the army that attacks Israel rather than all of Egypt. There could have been a more direct thing for this.
So in general, on those questions, right on the mark, I have a general answer is, I call it write a letter to the editor. It means the fact that God could have done it a different way. How come God created in 6 days? It would make more sense if created in 10 days, because a 10-day week would fit much better into a month. Or God could have created in 5 days. So it mesh. So we count on our fingers how often Shabbos is. I'm giving it a general answer. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying in general, the fact that God could have done something a different way doesn't mean he didn't do it the way he did it. I'm trying to explain why he did it the way he did. The fact he could have done it differently doesn't prove that my suggestion is wrong. It might bring up a question to consider another answer. So if there's another answer that explains it better, that's fine. But my point is that it's not enough to convince Pharaoh. I need all the Egyptian people convinced, because I need to create the atmosphere that they want to throw us out and they're going to lend us whatever we want. I need every Egyptian family kicking the Jews out. We're going to read it in the story later on. It's not just Pharaoh. Every Egyptian, every neighbor, they're so convinced that the only way to stop the plagues is for the Jews to go serve their God. It's bikuach nefesh. And every Egyptian is eager to send us out. So it's going to be a joint effort of all the Egyptian people to throw us out. And we'll be in a position that they'll lend us whatever we want, but we'll all be encouraged to leave, because God wants every Jew out of Egypt. And I'm basically enlisting all the Egyptians to get the job done. A decree by Pharaoh would not be enough. And therefore, I need to convince all of Egypt. And therefore, I need to plague all of Egypt. Okay? Why in the question, the different names of God, that's too complicated to review.
Right.
In general, God's name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is the name of Rit Ben Abtarim, and therefore he's the main name.
Right.
But Elohim is going to be in the background. Okay. Okay, it's the same God, but the emphasis in the story now is God's fulfilling Rit Ben Abtarim, which is God's name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. The God watching our history, the God who can do miracles, the God who's his presence as well. Now, why did the new pharaoh argue the Israelites would leave Egypt? The new pharaoh taking over has to blame the problems in Egypt on the old pharaoh. And the old pharaoh was tied to Yosef's family, who enabled the previous pharaoh to take up all their land and basically made life miserable for the Egyptians. So it makes sense that when the new pharaoh took over, they had a good reason to blame the Jews for what went wrong. That's one possibility. There's others as well. Why would he worry about them leaving Egypt? He wasn't worried about them leaving Egypt. He was worried about them coming from inside Egypt to take over Egypt. That was my whole point. But it's the idea of what's called the fifth column. Pharaoh was worried about an attack from the outside with an enemy from the inside joining the outside enemy to take over Egypt, and they'd become back in the government again. It's classic political maneuvering.
Okay. Rabbi, couldn't there simply be another explanation? That is that there has to be collective responsibility, collective moral responsibility. Okay. Appeasement to evil of Pharaoh is collaboration with evil, to answer that last gentleman's question. So therefore, God thought appropriate to punish the entire society. That's why also the Jews, remember, they're Jews for Pharaoh, who stayed and wanted to be enslaved. That's why the first three plagues also punished the Jews. There's not simply individual responsibility in a society. There's collective responsibility.
Okay, that's right. You're answering the moral issue. I'm talking about on the plot level. You're right. You're explaining why it's okay for God to do that. That's fine. I agree with that. But I'm saying why I need it in the plot. I'm explaining why it's important for the plot itself. Because I think there's some Egyptians like Pharaoh's daughter. I think the women in Egypt, there was a lot of, disobeying Pharaoh's order by the women of Egypt, if I follow Pshat. Bat Paro is a bit of a rebel, hiding Hebrew children. Shifra and Pua aren't listening to the Pharaoh's orders. Anyway, that's a different topic about the rebellion. But you're right. From a moral point of view, it also adds to it. I'm trying to explain from the plot. It helps if God's goal is to get the Jews out of Egypt. I was probably beating around the bush. I was being sort of that Zionistic. But to get the Jews to leave a country, someone's got to kick them out. They don't know how to take hints. So, but I'm not going to say more than that because it's not fair. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay. But that's my two cents of Zionism for today. Now, okay, again, there's other reasons for the plagues, for the Jews have to witness God. We'll see that next week. There's multi things going on. Am Yisrael has to be wowed also. That'll be our topic next week. Why Am Yisrael needs to see the plagues. But in the meantime, just for Egypt. Okay. Now let's get back to, I got to get to our big topic today because there's a lot to cover. Now that's back to our source sheet. Okay. We're going to follow with this theory, all the encounters between Moshe and Pharaoh. So his first encounter is a total failure. Remember in chapter 5, Moshe tells Pharaoh with Aaron, Elohei Yivrim Nikra Eleinu, the God of the Hebrews, appeared to us. We need to go 3-day distance into the desert and serve our God. And if we don't, that was a key point, penifka'enu bedevra ubecherev. And that's going to set the stage for the rest of the story. If we don't serve our God, we're all going to be smitten by pestilence and sword. And the question is we your slaves? Is we everybody in Egypt? Or we a nice way of saying you? So for sure, at the end of the day, we is a nice way of saying you. Did Am Yisrael suffer for the first 3 plagues? Machloket Parshanim. Some people say the first 4 or 5 plagues even. Definitely after 6th plague, Chumash clearly states that we were not hit by the plague. Was that the case in the earlier plagues? A bit unclear, but agreed. It could be we were punished as well. We'll see that topic next week as well. How much we are deserving of redemption. You know, how much do we go because we're deserving it, and how much God has to take us out no matter what. Basically, that's Moshe's claim. And then things go bad. Remember, Pharaoh doubles the workload. And that was not in the original plan that God told Moshe, at least. And Moshe confronts God, asking, why did it get worse? And I want to follow God's answer. Remember, Moshe returns to God and says, why'd you make things worse? Why'd you send me? Remember, he said, I'm not the man for the job. And ever since I came to speak in your name, you made things worse for your people. You didn't save them. Moshe's saying, I'm a failure. God doesn't explain exactly why. He just tells Moshe Rabbeinu, be patient. Yes? You'll see. Now he says, now you'll see what I'm going to do to Pharaoh. Because when I'm done with him, okay, he's going to send you out with a Yad Chazakah. We brought Rashi down. We pointed out that it's not just God's Yad Chazakah. It's not only God's plagues, but God's plagues is going to cause Pharaoh's Yad Chazakah to force us out of the country. We'll see that in the verses later on, that Egypt forces us out. It's going to expel us from Egypt. And I need to convince Egypt to expel us. And that expulsion is what's key. That's the idea of Girush. And therefore, the Yad Chazakah, not just of God, God's Yad Chazakah is going to bring Egypt Yad Chazakah to kick us out of Egypt. Now, we explained last week that in chapter 7, Moshe tells God, God tells Moshe, go again, and Moshe is reluctant, but God says, go anyhow. And he tells him, your job, go together with Aaron if you need his help. Tell Pharaoh, v'shilach, to send my people out of Egypt to serve me. And God tells Moshe, I'm going to harden his heart. Your job is to fail. The fact he's going to say no doesn't mean you have to go and warn him, because I need the warnings to slowly convince the people. Don't worry, Paro won't listen to you after every warning. I'm going to bring my plagues in Egypt, and that's how I'm going to take them out. And when I'm done, all of Egypt will know that I am God. When I put my hand against Egypt, and that's how I take my people out of Egypt. And Moshe does what Moshe don't do what God commanded. That was the introduction. And then every plague, you can take my word for it, but before every plague, before 1, 2, before every plague except 3, 6, and 7, Moshe goes, Shlach tami v'yavduni b'midbar, or Shlach tami v'yavduni. Every plague is, send my people out to serve me. He never says, send my people free. He always says, he didn't say, let my people go. He says, send my people out, and you can check it out later on your own. Always the same phrase. Shlach tami v'yavduni b'midbar, send my people out and serve me in the desert, or just send my people out to serve me. Clearly inferring to the 3-day distance into the desert. Now we have to follow the negotiations. We didn't do this last time. We just did the last negotiations. Even after the second plague, Pharaoh says, I'll go serve your God. Just stop the frogs and boast the dolphins, but Pharaoh hardens his heart. Now, after the 4th plague, we get an interesting negotiation. After plague 4, I forgot to translate this one, Pharaoh calls Moshe and says, Be'omer l'chu zivchu l'lechem ba'aretz. Go serve your God in the land. Aretz here does not mean the land of Israel. It means the land of Egypt. It's clear. But Pharaoh says, okay, you have to serve your God, serve him, but do it in the land, not in the desert. Right? Moshe gives some crazy excuse. He didn't say, we're not going, we can't serve a God in the land because we're leaving for good. He says, no, it's not right to do that, because if we would kill a lamb in Egypt, it's a toivat, something disgusting to Egypt. And therefore, we have to do it out for our own safety. Clearly, Moshe is giving the impression they're coming back. And the only reason we're going to the desert is for technical reasons, for serving our God. Moshe clearly is giving the impression that we're coming back. That's obvious from this negotiation. And that proves that it's never let my people go. It's always send my people out to serve me. And Pharaoh's assuming they're coming back. The question comes up, what is Pharaoh worried about? So most people say Pharaoh's worried about that we're not going to come back. and lose his slaves. I'm saying that's not on anyone's radar. I'm claiming is that he's afraid if they go out, they won't go out to serve their God. They'll go out, pretend they're going to serve their God. Instead, they're going to organize themselves and either declare independence somewhere else in Egypt and maybe join an outside enemy. Maybe they'll make some coalition, maybe with somebody else in Egypt. Maybe they'll join up with southern Egypt. He's afraid of them leaving where they're in slavery en masse and declaring independence and ultimately maybe coming back and joining an enemy and taking over. It's not just he's worried about losing his workload. You know, it's weeks of work. A three-day distance is at least 1 or 2 weeks of travel. But he's worried about giving him a taste of freedom, missing that work output for a couple of weeks. And why give him if they don't have to? But what's he afraid of? My point is, I don't think he's afraid that they're not coming back. He's afraid that they'll either declare independence on their own, they won't come back and work, or they might join up with an enemy and attack. And keep that in mind as we go through the story. Now, after every plague after that, Pharaoh keeps on changing his mind, saying no. And after the seventh plague, after that's Parsha Bo, I don't have to translate it because you just read it in Shul last week. Avdei Paro, that was his cabinet ministers, we saw this last week, tell him, how long is this nation going to be a stumbling block to us? Send the people out and let them serve their God. Egypt's ruined. That was Pharaoh's cabinet, which is representing the people, which means the people are all convinced that Moshe's warnings are correct. Let them go serve the God. It's only getting worse. And therefore, they call Moshe and Aaron back, and Pharaoh says, go serve your God. Go to the desert, fine. Go serve your God. But who's going? And Moshe gives this crazy excuse. He didn't say we need everyone to go because we're not coming back. What's he saying? We need all of our children to come with us. Why? Because it's a national holiday for everybody. We have to go serve our God. Pharaoh says not only the men can go. Now, that was Marty's question before the class began. What's he worried about? If the men go, they can come back and attack. No. If the men would go and form an army and come back and attack or join an enemy, Pharaoh has the women and children captive. Got it? In other words, in order to prevent declaration of independence or a possible war or takeover, then if only the men go, their financial backing, their cattle, the women and children, their families, can be taken hostage by Pharaoh. So if the men would go out and then come back and attack, Pharaoh can say, you attack us, I'll kill your women and children. I'll take all your cattle. We're finished. In other words, Pharaoh is worried not about them not coming back. He's keeping the women and children, keeping the cattle because he's worried because he has them as a bargaining chip in case they do attack. I'm hoping that answers Marty's original question from before class began. I'm trying to bring, why is Moshe arguing over these small technical details? They all relate to Pharaoh's fear of a takeover or at least declaring independence. So after the seventh plague, Pharaoh allows only the men to go. He's reluctant to send the women and children and explain what he's afraid of. And he understands Moshe's demands. He thinks that Moshe's up to something. If they all leave, the women and children and the cattle, it's not that they won't come back. It's they might declare independence. They might go to southern Egypt. Maybe southern Egypt might accept them or work with them. Or maybe they'll just declare their own independence. And especially, we'll see later, once they're armed. And the biggest fear, again, is that they organize with another enemy and try and take over. Now, then we get to the ninth plague. That was our topic last week. The ninth plague after Choshech, Paro finally gives in almost everything. Paro tells Moshe, L'hu yivdu et Hashem, rak tzorchem yitzag, just leave your cattle behind, take your women and children. And Moshe gives a crazy excuse and tells them, we have to bring our cattle, not because we're not coming back. We have to bring our cattle because we don't know what animals God wants. And it could be, even if you give us cattle, God might want Jewish cattle, not Egyptian cattle. We don't know why, but we don't know what God will ask for until we get there. And therefore, we have to take everything. Now, that excuse infuriates Pharaoh terribly. And that causes Pharaoh to harden his heart. And that's the last time God hardens his heart. And Paro says, you know, he's had it with Moshe Rabbeinu. He thought he'd give in to everything. He says, don't come back here again. And Moshe says, right. And that was our task last week, where God now has to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, the next plague gets over. Next time, I'm not going to harden his heart. And Moshe knows already. The next plague is Makat Bechorot. He didn't know it was the last plague. That was last week's share. That this is happening on the 11th. I mean, Choshech was 11th, 12th, and 13th of Nisan, and it's over. And negotiations take place on the 14th. In the middle of the argument, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, and then Moshe didn't realize that to the end, that after Makat Bechorot, it's the last plague. And even though up until now, God's been hardening Pharaoh's heart, this time I'm not going to harden his heart. And the main thing is, after the next plague, now he's going to let you go. He's going to force you out. Gareshi, Gareshi Tchamizeh. He's going to force you to leave Egypt. And that's what we need to get the gold and silver. And therefore, remind the people, because you're leaving tonight after Makat Bechorot, they're going to come to you and Pharaoh's going to kick you out. Remind the people when you're being thrown out. That's why it's a last minute warning to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, remind the people to borrow when they're going to be thrown out at night. Make sure to borrow and take advantage of the situation. Borrow gold and silver, and God will give favor in the eyes of the people. And Moshe was now respected by the people, and everything's set now for the Exodus. Then Moshe gives the final warning to Pharaoh. Remember, tonight at midnight, it's over. The firstborn will die, explaining all the things God told him 2 weeks earlier in the Parsha Lachodesh. And nothing will happen to the Jews, if those who bring the Korban. And then when the Egyptians see that there's this terrible plague and people are dying left and right in Egypt, but the only houses where no one died and the plague did not affect it were the houses where the Jews brought a sacrifice, the Korban, the Pesach, that convinces all of Egypt that Jewish sacrifice works and the plagues are only going to get worse. And everyone in Egypt is just eager to get the Jews out there to go serve their God. And therefore God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to come to me and tell us to give out, and then we'll all leave. And that's when he leaves Pharaoh's palace. And that night is Makat Bechorot, as the story continues. In the meantime, we have the flashback to Parsha Lechodesh. That's the first half of chapter 12. And now that Egypt's ready and Am Yisrael's ready, now Am Yisrael's ready for redemption. And they do something to show God they're worthy. Now we're ready to get out of Egypt. Now we have to follow the story of the Exodus. Va'yibachatzei came to pass at midnight. We're in Shmot chapter 12, verse 29. God smit every firstborn in Egypt. The famous story, Paro gets up at night and sees he and his whole cabinet, and you see everyone in Egypt is screaming. There's death in every home. And now here's what happens. In the middle of the night, after Makat Bechorot, Paro calls Moshe and Aaron. He comes to them instead of they coming to him. And he tells him, Kumutsu mitochami, get up and leave my nation, you and all the people of Israel. That puts icing on the cake as far as send my people out, I'm supposed to let my people go. Pharaoh never gives us freedom. Pharaoh says, go serve your God like you said. The negotiations broke down last on cattle. And what's Pharaoh say? Gam somchem, gam bekarchem, kuk hasher dibartem. Take your cattle, your sheep, and your cows, etc. Take them with you as you asked for and go. And when you get there, make a mishaberach for me, pray for my well-being as well. Basically, it's crystal clear. Pharaoh is not setting free. They never asked for freedom. He's forcing them out to go serve their God. And Egypt is more interested in our leaving than we are. And therefore, read the next pasuk. It says it all. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. But techezach mitzrayim ala am lemeher l'shachem min ha'aretz. That's the yad chazakah that God was talking about before the Moshe Rabbeinu. Egypt was forcing us out to leave, but the exact Mitzrayim, Egypt's strong hand, they were forcing us out of Egypt, sending us out, because the Egyptians said, the whole Egyptian people were saying, we're all going to die. All of Egypt is convinced it's in their interest that the Jews go serve their God, and therefore, they're going to force us out. We're going to see this again in three more psukim. We are rushed out by the Egyptians to the point that Egypt doesn't let us bake our bread. We were not planning on leaving in such a rush. Remember? And therefore, we were planning to make bread in the morning like we did every morning. We took the dough that we put at night for tomorrow for baking rolls in the morning. But therefore, the people had to take out the dough before it rose. And they put it in their baking troughs, whatever they were. And they had to put it into some type of knapsack. Oh, they don't have knapsacks. So they need to borrow clothing. And the extra clothing of the Egyptians becomes the backpacks that they put the dough in. And therefore, because we're being thrown out by Egypt and we're being rushed out, Bnei Yisrael did as Moshe told them to do. They borrow from the Egyptians everything we ask for. And Egypt is so convinced that we have to go serve our God, they lend us everything we ask for. Of course, they think we're coming back. And therefore, God gave favor in the eyes of the people. and we borrowed from them, and they gave us whatever we wanted, and we took advantage of that as God told us to. Now, the moral issue, we'll see, we call it back wages. But remember, we're only borrowing it. We're not planning to steal it because maybe we're coming back. We're not going to Israel now. We're going to serve our God. And that's what the Jews are doing. Everyone is assuming, including the Jewish people, we're going to serve our God. We're not going to Israel. Maybe we'll get there later. But when we leave Egypt, we're all planning to go. And the assumption is we're going to come back. And we're going to come back afterwards. That's what Egypt thinks. And that's what we're telling everybody. Now let's follow the story. Remember, we have to go 3-day distance into the desert. Follow the 3 days. It works like a charm. Paraklam, Pasek Lamed Zayin, verse 37. Vaistu b'nei Yisrael b'Ramses Sukkota. That's day one. From Ramses, the center of Egypt, where the people, where most of the people are living, to Sukkot. Now, did everyone come gathered together in Ramses for the Pesach? It could be, but everyone is in their homes in the area of Ramses, and we go from Ramses to Sukkot. We're thrown out from Ramses to the area, and we go to Sukkot. Sukkot is somewhere on the way. Most likely, it's a temporary area where we put up booths. It's named not after the site, but it's named after what we did there. Because, you know, we just traveled. We have to set up camp overnight. Okay? And some 600,000 men, I mean, that's military nomenclature. I mean, we're talking about a major military force leaving Egypt. Okay? Not mentioning the children. In other words, we're leaving Egypt with a lot of male able-bodied people, which could be a military threat. But there's a reason why the Pasuk mentions this, about the size of our army. Now, it's not an organized army, but it's a potential army. Many people are following them. Now, who these Arab are, we're not sure, but everyone's following them because everyone's pushing us out to go serve our God. And a lot of cattle and sheep and cattle are with us because we have to go. Everyone wants to serve the God. And therefore, we need all this cattle. Everything we own is coming with us. Now, because we left in such a rush and we took the dough with us, what did we eat for breakfast the next morning? Be'afu'ata batzeik, the dough that we took out, because we didn't leave with matzah, we left with dough, which we took out of matzah, and we took it out, you know, in dough form. We baked it matzahs because we didn't have our ovens, because it didn't rise, and we didn't have our ovens, and we had to make it on a tabun, what we call pita nowadays. Why? Ki goshumi mitzrayim. We're eating matzah not because we were commanded to eat matzah. We're eating matzah because we were thrown out of Egypt. And Egypt, we couldn't linger. We wanted to, but Egypt didn't let us, and we had no other supplies. And therefore, we quote this when we explain in the Seder while we're eating matzah, but it could be we're eating matzah not just to remember that God took us out of Egypt, to remember that God had to kick us out of Egypt, that we were thrown out of Egypt, and to get us to leave. Now, then we summarize Brit Ben Tarim. We were there for some 430 years, and we have our summary psukim. So we're on our way out. We have day one. What was day one? Ramses to Sukkot. I want to show you the 3 days now. Day one is Ramses to Sukkot. We just read that. Day two, we're going to read in a minute, is from Etam, from Sukkot to Etam, which is on the edge of the desert. And we're armed. We'll read this in a minute, and we'll see what's going to happen on day three in chapter 14. And now we get to how God changes his plan. So everyone is Parsha B'Shalach. This is a general statement. This has to do with God's names, Elokim Yod Kei Vav Kei. I'm not going to leave that alone for now, but when we leave Egypt, Elokim doesn't lead us to Israel straight. We go to the desert first for multiple reasons. Now, what's God worried about? That if the question, are we going to see war? Who are we going to see war with? But if we start war with Canaan, we're going to be afraid and come back to Egypt. But we have to spend time in the desert before we go and attack Egypt for psychological reasons, which we'll deal with later on. If the people would encounter war with the Canaanites right away, they'd get scared to go back to Egypt, go back to slavery, and we see that happening later in the desert as well. Now, but again, Pasuk, the opening Pasuk Yitzchak, I'll leave alone for now. For our topic, Pasuk Yitzchak, we're going back to our story. What does God do? God sends us where? Instead of going towards Canaan, we go to the desert. Instead of going northeast, we go southeast. We're not going towards Israel at all. We're going towards the Sinai Desert, towards the Yamsuf, towards the Red Sea. And we leave armed. How do we leave armed? It must be the Egyptians lent us arms. Why would they? If we're going out to the desert, a 3-day distance, it means 2 or 3 weeks in the desert, there could be wild animals in the desert. Amalekite type people might attack us. We need a police force because we want to serve our God, but to get there safely, we need to arm ourselves. And again, Egypt is so convinced they're willing to lend us arms. If I want to give a really bad analogy, we had the same problem in the Oslo Agreement. Remember, it was supposed to be a peace agreement, right? To give them autonomy. But the Palestinian Authority and Oslo Agreements wanted arms for a police force. Israel was against it because you could use those arms against us. But they claimed that what? You can't have independence. You can't have autonomy without a police force. It's for civil needs. I'm just giving a bad analogy that there's logic in why the Egyptians would lend us arms for in order that we have the 2 weeks of freedom to go serve a God in the desert, because the desert's far away and we need to protect ourselves. They're not giving us arms to go to war. They're giving us arms to protect ourselves from outside attackers or from, you know, just a local police force. But what we see here is we get arms, and this military information is key for the next part of the story. Okay, Moshe takes Yosef's bones, and now here's day two. Vayisumi Sukkot, vechunu be'itam b'kseh amidbar. Again, we know a 3-day distance. Day one, distance. Ramses to Sukkot. Day two, Sukkot to Etam. And we're at the edge of the desert. Now, why is that important? We need to go a 3-day distance into the desert. Therefore, what's everyone expecting to happen now on day three? You can draw a map in your head, but basically, we've gone from the Nile Delta towards the Red Sea. We've walked a 2-day distance, which is pretty much the distance to the area, the northern tip of the Red Sea. But the Suez Canal pretty much begins nowadays. We're at the edge of the sea, and now we need to go one more day distance into the desert. And everyone's expecting us now to go to the desert. And there's no secrets. We're being followed. We're being pushed. We're being encouraged to leave. And everyone's expecting now on day three, or at least distance of day three, to go into the desert. And now out of nowhere, no one's expecting this, including Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe gets a last-minute command. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'amor. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yashuvu. Tell b'nei Yisrael, return. V'yashuvu means to return. Return to Egypt. And he gives them, I call them Israeli instructions, where to set up camp. He gives them very complicated instructions where to set up camp. V'yachanu lifnei pi'achirot ben migdo ben hayam. Lifnei ba'atzvon lichut tel'chan v'yam. Basically saying to them, don't go back to Ramses. Don't go back to central Egypt. Go back towards southern Egypt. Now, set up camp on the Egyptian side of the Red Sea, but instead of going into the desert, turn around, go back towards Egypt, but not to Ramses, but towards southern Egypt, and set up camp by the sea. Now, you have to read the next line carefully. The Amar Paro is not Pharaoh talking. If I want to put quotation marks there, let me put in a quotation mark. I'll show you carefully. I put a quotation mark right here, right? God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tell B'nai Yisrael v'yashuvu. Now there's another quotation mark here. God's telling Moshe Rabbeinu two things. First, tell B'nai Yisrael, let them go back where to set up camp. Okay? And then here I close this quote. This is what you tell B'nai Yisrael. And now God's still talking to Moshe Rabbeinu until here. God is explaining to Moshe Rabbeinu what the reason for the strategic move is. God has to explain to Moshe Rabbeinu why is he telling them to set up camp by the Red Sea and why not to go to the desert. In order that Pharaoh will say, and I want to explain this as a military lot reasoning. God's telling Moshe Rabbeinu part of his military plan. I want Paro to think about Bnei Israel. They're still unsettled in the Ba'aretz means in Egypt. And they're closed in by the desert. This is reason for him to blitz. It's not I'm going to say it like this. Pharaoh, as soon as we don't go to the desert, as soon as we turn around and go back towards Egypt, Pharaoh is convinced he's been duped. Pharaoh is convinced his biggest fear that they're coming back to attack is clear to him now. That he was worried about that from day one. The second we don't go to the desert on day three and we come back towards Egypt, Pharaoh is angry, and he's sure we're attacking. The question is, do I attack right away, or do I wait? So Pharaoh could be patient, say maybe they're just taking a day off, maybe give them more time, maybe they're not rebelling. I could wait and see what happens, or I could say, I could be convinced that this is a rebellion, and the sooner I attack, the better. If I go back to football analogy, If I see a double reverse, I have to I have to see the quarterback doing some kind of play in the backfield. I have to do a blitz. The linebacker calls the blitz, meaning I need to give Pharaoh a reason why he's going to be blitz, because if they're attacking, the more time Israel has, the more organized they're going to be and more chance an enemy will join up. Time is working against the Egyptians, and therefore I have to attack Israel as soon as I can. Why attack him now? They're unsettled in the land. They don't have perimeter defenses. They're not set up yet. Their army's not organized. They're just starting. And I have them with their backs to the sea. They're in a perfect position now to blitz. And that's going to cause Pharaoh to harden his heart and chase them. And that'll cause him to, lose in battle. Okay? And by doing this, everyone in Egypt will know that I'm God. V'yasuchem b'nei Yisrael, this does what? They go back towards Egypt. Got my point? What I'm trying to explain is, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu at the last minute, everyone's caught by surprise. Moshe, the Jewish people, everybody, we're not going to the desert. We've been saying all along we're going to the desert. God says, take a day off, go back a little bit towards Egypt, but not back towards Ramses, but back towards southern Egypt. And that's going to cause Pharaoh to think they've been duped. Now, watch the next line. Let's turn up the mount. Let's clear the drawings and continue. Look at Pasuk Hey and try to understand this without this background. I want to build everything on this Pasuk. I'm building a lot. Why? Pharaoh was told the people ran away. What do you mean he was told they ran away? Didn't he let them go? How do you understand this? Pharaoh was told the people ran away. What do you mean they ran away? Now, the classic parshanim come and say what? We didn't come back after 3 days. We didn't come back. And that's why he chases us. You know, he said 3 days, but it's a 3 day distance and we're not in the desert yet. Pharaoh isn't told that, what do you call it? We didn't come back to Egypt. He's told we did come back to Egypt. Got my point? Pharaoh wasn't told that we ran away from Egypt. We're in Egypt. No one ran away from Egypt. Had we gone to the desert, there'd be no reason for him to chase us. What does he realize? We ran away from slavery, not from Egypt. Listen to the words now. Pharaoh changes his whole mind about his policy with Israel. Pharaoh and his cabinet now change their mind because their biggest fears came true. Remember, Maso Tassino, what have we done? We sent Israel out of slavery, but they're in Egypt. Now they're independent people in Egypt. Kishilachnit Yisrami Avdeno says, we've been duped. What have we done? We've sent them out of slavery, but they're in Egypt. But now they're in southern Egypt. They might join up, but they can declare independence in southern Egypt. They can join an enemy in southern Egypt. They can join another. What Pharaoh is bothered by, it's because we don't go to the desert. That's why he changes his mind. It's not because we don't come back. We do come back. We don't come back to Ramses. We don't come back to our homes. But we have all of our cattle. We have maybe some Egyptian cattle. We have gold and silver of Egypt that we borrowed. We're armed. We have everything we need for sure to declare independence and possibly even to join in a revolt. And now he's lost his workflow. But it's clear to him now we're not coming back to our jobs. And we have good reason and the ability now to declare independence. That was his fear from day one. But Pharaoh doesn't change his mind because we don't come back. Pharaoh changed his mind because we do come back. That's my key point I want to make. And Pharaoh was told that people ran away, not they ran away from Egypt. They ran away from slavery. Now, if he's sure we've left slavery and we're declaring freedom and we're still in Egypt, now that's a military threat to his government. Now, he could wait and see, he can negotiate, but he decides to blitz, in fact, because now he has a great time to do it. And watch, we'll see everyone's reaction. See, he gets his chariot together, takes his people with him. He takes the best 600 chariots, okay? All the chariots of Egypt, the big army. And they go and chase them. Now we have a summary. What did God do? God hardened Pharaoh's heart to make that decision to attack. And he chases Bnei Israel. And Bnei Israel are leaving. They're getting themselves organized. They're free now. They're what do you call it? They're exciting. They're celebrating. And we're ready for an encounter. Okay. Now, Egypt sends their army, and they catch him capped by the sea. Okay? All Pharaoh's horses and all Pharaoh's men, etc., his whole army, where God told him to meet them. Now, watch Bnei Israel's reaction to what's happening. Am Yisrael has no idea. It's not planning a rebellion. Was never undermined. They're just following orders. Okay? But look what the Egyptians, look what Am Yisrael says now. Paro comes close with his army. And they sort of look up and they see the Egyptian army is about to attack them. They're scared stiff and they cry out to God. And what do they tell Moshe Rabbeinu? Okay? Listen to their attitude. Hamibli ein kvarim b'mitzrayim lekachtem lumot b'midbar. Mazot asita lanu lotzeinu b'mitzrayim. What have you done to us? We're all going to be dead now. He says, what kind of crazy plan was this to take us to the desert? So it's, why bring us out here? Was your whole plan was crazy. And listen to what he says now. What did he tell back in Egypt? What have we been telling you ever since you started your whole mission? Leave us alone. Let us serve Egypt. Remember I told you that in the eyes of the people, and for sure in the eyes of the Egyptians, it's totally unrealistic to take the Jews out of Egypt to go to Israel, to go to the desert. There's no way you can survive the desert. And the people are telling Moshe Rabbeinu, we told you so. This whole plan was ridiculous. There's no way we can survive on our own out here. And now that Moshe took them to the desert and they're about to be attacked, they're sure that they're finished. And Egypt's going to attack them. They'll be taken back to slavery. You know, the men will be killed in battle. And they're going to blame Moshe for the failure. I just want to prove to you from here that we see that the people's attitude about leaving Egypt, everyone thought the idea was ridiculous and not realistic. To prove my point before that, to explain why we can't tell the truth to Pharaoh, because telling Pharaoh we want to go to the desert and go to what do you call it, to Israel and serve and become a nation there is not realistic, because there's no way you can pick up the people and take them out. And the people thought Moshe made your whole idea is crazy. Okay? So Moshe tells people not to worry. Don't worry, you'll see God's greatness. And that leads to Kriyat Yamsuf. Because we're gonna see next week that I need to punish Pharaoh, but I also need to get Am Yisrael ready for Har Sinai. But I need to do things for Am Yisrael to have them accept God as well. I need to do something miraculous to convince Am Yisrael that he's their God. And that'll take a lot of events until we get to Har Sinai. Now, everyone knows the rest of the story. It's called Kriyat Yamsuf. Pharaoh attacks and he gets, you know, it's, we're sure we're dead and we're saved. But on top of it, we go through the Red Sea and basically God closes the curtain on us in Egypt and punishes the Egyptian army. But what do we gain? Egypt officially declared war against the Jewish people, correct? They declared war against us. If Egypt declares war against us, what happens to all the things that we borrowed from a legal point of view? If you're worried about the moral side of it, what happens? So Egypt loses the war. God intervenes. Okay, we get to keep the spoils of war. What we borrowed now is now nationalized, because what do you mean? We're going to return things. They try to kill us. We're going to return things. We're in the desert now on our own because we crossed the Red Sea. We're on the other side now. We're not coming back. But we have the right to keep what we borrowed because they went to war against us. Is that my point? That was by Pharaoh declaring war, he declared war on his own. That was his mistake. That was Egypt declared war. They could have waited a couple of days. Maybe we would have gone to the desert. We don't know, but Pharaoh declared war. He lost the war. And what do we have now? Now, legally, everything we borrowed, we can keep. God kept his promise of Brit Ben Abtarim, of Rechush Gadol, of great wealth. Okay? He kept his promise to punish the oppressor. Remember, Egypt's not being enslaved for not being Zionistic. Egypt's being punished for enslaving a migrant people. We leave with our great wealth. And we never lie because we do go to serve our God. Okay? And just like they try to outsmart us starting in slavery. Remember the first Haban and Tachmalo? God outsmarted them. And now the next story will be getting Am Yisrael to go to Har Sinai. That'll be our topic next week. How all these events that happened in Egypt are going to be part of getting Am Yisrael ready to get to Har Sinai and to become God's people. But from the Egyptian point of view, what have we gained? We got the entire, let me just summarize this real fast because my time's up. What we've basically done is that we got all of Israel out of Egypt. Getting 2 million people out of Egypt overnight with great wealth, that's mission impossible. But without this plan of Moshe warning Pharaoh over and over again and getting all of Egypt convinced and building up that tension in Egypt, without the success of warnings and Pharaoh saying no over and over again, and finally after the 10th plague and together with doing the Korban Pesach, convincing Egypt the Jewish sacrifice works, that gets all of Egypt hyped to kick us out of Egypt and give us all the wealth, and we can borrow whatever we want. And that's how God, with this master plan, fulfills Brit Ben Haptarim. It should have wowed everybody. You know, it's why it doesn't work so well in Am Yisrael, we have to see in next week's share. But basically, Egypt is punished for enslaving a migrant people. Right? What we borrow, we borrowed. And we get to keep it because they declared war. They declared war. We didn't declare war. That last maneuver on day three, where God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, set up camp, go back a half a day, and set up camp on the Egyptian side of the Red Sea, that maneuver causes Pharaoh to make a stupid mistake. Basically, Pharaoh's intelligence thinks there's a rebellion happening, but we had no intention of rebelling. They declared war against us. We won the war. We get to keep the spoils. So that's how I want to use our explanation from the first year of what is Pharaoh worried about and what's the reason for this crazy plan of serving God in the desert, why it appears to be a lie, why it's necessary. Now, when you put all these things together, we see how God accomplished his goal in a very, I think, pretty amazing way. And God's plan, we don't know about it, everything to the last minute. On day three, when God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, send the people back and don't go to the desert, I think that's the most amazing maneuver that solves all the problems. And remember, Pharaoh chases us not because we don't come back. He chases us because we do come back. But we don't go back to slavery. We come back to Egypt, and he's worried about our independence and possibly a takeover. Okay. So that's the end of this part of the series. But we have one more show next week, how this story of what happened in Egypt, how it affects us, our journey to Har Sinai, and why it takes more than 3 days.
May I ask a question, please?
Yeah, question. Go ahead. Yeah.
If I have my timeline correct, the Korban Pesach was slaughtered on the 14th in the afternoon.
Early afternoon.
On the morning of the 15th, they borrowed everything before they went out.
Either late at night or early in the morning, yeah. No, we were sitting down, we were told by God, don't leave your homes until morning.
Right.
Egypt in the middle of the night starts kicking us out.
So why
we tell them we borrow.
So why is it then that if the Korban Pesach was eaten all night, why was it Masnechem Chagurim Nalechem Baraglechem Akalchem Biyezechem Vachaltem Bechipozon? What do we have to eat Bechipozon and get a stomachache? We could have eaten it. We had 6 hours at night.
Okay, that's this year. Maybe I'll do that next week. But it relates to next week's year as well. Chipozon doesn't mean eat it quickly. Chipozon means trepidation. Not quick. That doesn't mean brush your food down. Take a Korban Pesach. Maybe we'll do it next week. Follow chipozon. It's always some type of trepidation. Now, when you're fearful, that you do things quickly. Sometimes you make quick mistakes, but you do things quickly, but you do it eagerly and quickly. But the main Korban Pesach, it's never called a Korban there. It's a Zevach Pesach. It's a family. Right. The Pesach is a sit-down dinner that's going to spark a conversation. Now we're about to leave Egypt and go free. We want to sit down to a family meal and appreciate what's happening. And it's a meal of anti-Egyptian. We're going to come properly dressed. Come to the meal properly dressed. And Malkechem, I don't think, is walking sticks. For the elderly, it's a sign. It's your rank. It's your rank within, the shape that your walking stick is like, it's what you're holding. Your walking stick is like a yellow belt, green belt, red belt, black belt, and karate kind of thing. But it's not, you don't eat it because you're about to walk. First, everyone's well fed, but we are told this in that command, God tells the people, and Moshe tells the people, no one leaves the house till morning. It's dangerous outside at night because Makab Chorot's happening. And therefore, you're eating this korban when everyone around you is dying. Every other family outside around you is hit by this plague, and you're eating in trepidation because your lives are on the line. When there's a terrible plague going on, and you're sitting down to a meal, eat it, and you should be worried. But you have to realize that when you're eating this, you're alive because why? Because you followed God's commands. And you sit down to a meal, and you eat, and you don't do anything else, and you come properly dressed. Start acting like free people. But don't come in your pajamas, come properly dressed. Really practice what it means to be free. Which is a big theme at the Seder. We lean into things like that. Right? But that's more
thank you.
Okay?
Thank you.
Rabbi?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Shelley.
Why did the people of Egypt, why were they so willing to lend the stuff in the morning? Did they think that somehow they needed it to serve their God? I mean, people are still very much, even when tragedy, people are still attached to their stuff.
That was the whole point of the shir, is that because they're assuming they're coming back because we're only going to serve our God. They're convinced that's what we need to do. And people care about their things, but I'll give you a bad example. I mean, maybe it's a good example. If you remember, Lahavdil Elef Havdalot, in the Six-Day War, when the paratroopers came to Jerusalem, like last minute, when Jordan started into the war, that they were staying in people's houses in Jerusalem, and people lent them, and people, they had, everything was last minute. They gave them food, they gave everything they needed. If someone's going to help you stay alive, you lend them whatever you want. You follow? When your lives are on the line, and you're assuming if these people don't serve their God, they're going to die, and they borrow things, whatever you ask for, just go. Anything you need. Because they see, that's what it said, God gave Chena'am. The people found favor in the eyes of Egypt. They were so sure that that's going to save Egypt from their troubles. So they'll lend them anything they need. But they're assuming they're coming back, therefore they're willing to lend. That was exactly the Ebenezer we saw in the first year. Let me open up that Ebenezer. What is that? Wrong one. Let me open up the file. Where is it? Documents. Back this way. Source sheets. I'm going to open up a file for you. We saw last week. No, the first week. That was Exodus 1. Oh my gosh, here we go. Let me find it. I think it's here. Oh, I didn't share my screen. Share my screen. And no, that's not it. Where are you guys? Here we are. Share screen. And okay. In the first share, I showed you the Ebenezer. Somewhere down here was the Ebenezer. Shbam. Ebenezer. No, it's farther up. I know we had the Ebenezer there. Oh, here it is. Yeah, that was it. Remember, this was Ebenezer on chapter 11, verse 4. And no, this was a great thing that God did. Okay, that no one told the secret. We gave a different answer for that. Okay. 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 Now, okay. And we never lied. Okay. The chokhmah that somebody's got. Okay. Bashir Nireli, what's the reason for this? Okay. Shayazer davar be balvor shnei davarim. Achad shitnu lem kesef v'chei zahav. That was part of this trickery was that we get gold and silver. V'ilu yadu shelo yashuvu lo yonatnim. If they didn't think we were coming back, they wouldn't lend us. They wouldn't borrow. That's what Ebenezer points out. There's a need for that because of that. Okay.
Can I ask something?
Sure.
You use the word Red Sea. I don't know where it's mentioned, Red Sea. Isn't Yam Suf the Reed Sea?
Yeah, but we call whatever is the Sea of Reeds, it has to be, it can't be along the, what do you call it? It can't be along the Mediterranean coast. It's got to be what we call
The Red Sea. Yeah,
it's called the Red Sea or the Sea of Reeds. Fine. But we call in all the maps the Red Sea. Remember the famous question, if you drop a rock, what happens if you drop a rock in the Red Sea? I forget what happens. I forgot the joke. But Sea of Reeds. Okay, fine. That's the name. But we call it the Sea of Reeds or the Red Sea. But whatever the Red Sea is on the maps they have nowadays, that's the direction. They went southeast, not northeast.
Oh, I have one more question. At one point in the parsha yesterday, I think it's in Shishi, the God is talking to the people, and he refers to, I think it's the Seder, refer to it as a hook, if you accept the traditional meaning of hook as a mitzvah, you can't explain if the if there was ever a mitzvah that you could explain, it's why you're having the meal. So why is, how should we look at the word?
Okay, so the word chok by Pesach, chokat haPesach, I think chok in simple Hebrew is something that's said that doesn't change. A chok, this has no obvious reason, but there's reasons for it. There's a famous Rambam. That's the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, and Ibn Ezra, Rashbam. They all explain that chok are things that have, they might not have an obvious reason, but there's some logic to them. But the main thing that makes a chok, it's set and doesn't change. So Korban Pesach is set into our calendar. Every year in the spring, we bring the Pesach, and the laws are you have to have milah. Those, and anything that has a set of rules is called a chok.
Thank you very much. Rabbi, one question. If we went and had under the ruse that we were going for just 3 days and the legendary Erev Rav joined Bnei Yisrael, did they go under false pretenses, the Erev Rav?
I think
and all the problems that we've had with the Erev Rav after that may be because of those false pretenses.
So just a little, what's called Gilui, no, a little thing. The Erev Rav are never mentioned again in Chumash.
Okay.
Now, in Midrash, when we do something wrong, we blame them. That's our Jewish tradition. We never blame ourselves, we blame somebody else. Is that right or wrong? You can argue. It depends what time period you're living in. Right. But in my opinion, as soon as Egypt started attacking, they all went home. I think, in my opinion, if there's an Erev Rav, I call it, it's like, it's all the gawkers, everyone's following you. You follow? There's no secrets. We're going to serve our God. Everyone wants to see what's happening. So,
right.
Following us. As soon as we go back and Egypt attacks, they run home. Why would they stay? Remember, the Jewish people gave up hope. They think they're all dead. What do you want from the Egyptians?
Right.
So again, then we have an Asafsuf. They're not called the Erev Rav later on. Who's the Asafsuf? That's a good question. But the Erev Rav are never mentioned again in Chumash. Now, again, I understand why the Medrash quotes them, but in Pshat, they go back home without the things they borrowed.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Again, I have to stop here. I have to leave in a minute, but I see there's a discussion about the moral issues. Again, I try to just allude to that. I'm sure whatever God does, he's just, he's doing the right thing. I think in the story, you can find justification for what we're doing. We're doing it. And again, it's part of Havanei Chak. In war, they try to outsmart us. We get them back. Mida keneged mida. That's a big theme all through Chumash. You try to outsmart us, God outsmarts them. But as far as the right to borrow things and not return it, again, they declared war. But morally, it's called, we call it back wages. They get cheap labor for hundreds of years. That's what they deserve. It's like a divine. Right? But again, we'll never understand. Our assumption is always God is just and right. We don't have enough information to understand all the details of things. So we just try to understand the story the way it's written, but we don't sit back and question God. We sit back and question, we ask ourselves, what's the meaning of the story? But with the assumption God's just and right. But that's a philosophical question. Okay. Anyway, I need to stop here, but I try to share with you a different, it's called re-examining the Exodus. Again, you don't have to agree with it, but at least consider it.
When
you...
Excellent, Rabbi.
What, Dennis?
Excellent.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
You were very comprehensive. You covered everything from the philosophical to the Torah to the Talmud. It was great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, everyone have a good week and we'll pray for better news.
Thank you.
Bye, Israel. Okay, have a good week. Bye bye.
You too. Bye bye.